So I ask you guys about your least and most favorite place to go. For me, my least favorite place to go, I don't know, and part of this is because, well, anyway, my least favorite place to go is probably honestly my car. I hate driving. If I could, you know, if you could, like, one of the questions I want to ask someday is, like, if you could hire somebody to do one thing forever, like you could have a cook forever or a chauffeur forever or a house cleaner forever, you know what I mean? Like, whatever, like, which one would you pick? And for me, it would be the chauffeur. No questions asked. Tammy's disagreeing with me. No?
No.
You don't?
We've had a driver before.
Horrible.
Okay. Hated it. Oh. All right. Was that in Russia?
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Anyway, and I love my truck. It's weird. Like, I did an experiment one day, and my heart rate driving is higher than my heart rate brisk walking. It's like you're driving this half ton of metal and plastic, and you are responsible for the lives of everyone in it and everyone around you. And it's just way too much responsibility for me. So I don't like driving. Anyway, my favorite place to go probably, and I should have said past places because I'm cheating now, but my grandparents' house. Like, my grandparents had, and still have a, I don't know how it happened, but they're one of two houses that are literally surrounded by farmland in Pennsylvania. Like, I can remember as a child regularly driving cows out of my parents' or grandparents' yard because they'd gotten through the fence and stuff like that. Now, I don't know, like I'm saying, it's very strange. It's them and their neighbors, and I don't know if maybe the farmer hit a drought and like sold 2 quarter-acre plots or something like that. I don't know how in the world they got there. But it's on top of a hill. It literally faces west. So the sunset, you see these beautiful sunsets over this, you know, all these fields and silos and stuff. And they have a pool. And, you know, to this day, I think of chicken patties warmed up on, you guys remember those ridged plastic trays that you would put in the microwave? And so I think of chicken patties heated up on that, watching Bob Barker do The Price is Right at 11 o'clock every day of the week. And swimming right afterward, and just the Schwann's guy would come by. We had a specific time he would come by. Anyway, so I don't know. That makes me feel very warm thinking of my grandparents' house and just the fun we would have there. So I ask you that because today's lesson, I think, is going to be about love for a place. But I think what you realize, and this is where I'm going with all the questions about your least and most favorite places, it's often not so much about the place per se, although maybe the Scottish Highlands is, but it's not about the place per se, but it's about something connected with the place, like a community or whatever. Like, the things we don't like are exercises in futility, you know, associated with going to a place, over-responsibility, dangers and insecurity, or at least significant inconvenience, you know, that kind of thing. The things we do like tend to be relationships, pleasures, unique experiences, relationships. I already said relationships, sorry, stuff like that. So I say all that because today's psalm is a song of ascents. And a song of ascent, you guys, if you remember from last week, Pastor Matt did a song of ascent. And we don't know for sure exactly when the song of ascents were sung. Like, we know it was when you were going to the temple. Like, some people think, you know, you would sing it like while you were still out on the road. Some people think you would sing it as you were literally going up Mount Zion. By the way, Mount Zion is the mountain on which the temple is built. So you'll see Zion appear in here. So not sure exactly when the songs of ascent would have been sung, but doesn't really matter. The point is, these are songs you would sing in anticipation of going to the temple and meeting with God and worshiping and stuff like that. And understandably enough, they are songs celebrating the temple, the place of God's dwelling, and how fantastic and good it was. So my hope is to go through Psalm 132 and talk about why in the world do we care about that today? How's that matter for us? So here's my really long, can't figure out a short way to say it objective, and then I'll give you my still long but simpler objective. Out of joy for God's dwelling place, more on that later, because God doesn't have a dwelling place now, to build up Zion's growth and gathering in light of its past covenant qualities, present covenant community, and future covenant culmination. Which I know is a lot. So if you want the, like, still not exactly first grade level explanation, the easier objective is driven by joy to grow and gather God's covenant community. My hope is by the time this psalm is over, our engines will be running on the fuel of joy in Jesus and getting the mileage of growing and gathering God's people. That's where I'm hoping this thing ends up going, but we'll see. So remember the way we read Psalms, or at least the way I'm suggesting we read Psalms, it's not so much a treatise that you sit down and work through logically and pick apart and diagram. This is more an emotional, I don't know, enjoyment, walkthrough experience kind of thing. It's a meadow, not a laboratory. You can still do science in the meadow, but a meadow is more designed for enjoyment than just being there, that kind of thing. So I say all that. So keep that in mind. It kind of breaks down the way I looked into it as an ABAB structure. So verses 1 through 5 is the first A, recall this, David's passion. And then in verses 10 and 12, it'll be recall this, God's promise. But then the two B's are 6 through 9, community gathering, and then 13 through 18, community flourishing. But enough about all the hullabaloo. Let me ask somebody to read, and now I'm really going to put the screws on for you guys who are brave enough to read, and if you don't, we'll sit here awkwardly till I do. But when you read, like, and both personally and if you read aloud, like do it slow, you know what I mean? Like, because this is a psalm. Like, let the words sink in. Let us ponder them and stuff like that. But that's okay. Usually when people walk publicly or when people speak publicly, they tend to speak really quickly. Like they tell us at graduation when the kids are supposed to walk down, like walk down the aisle really slowly, you know, like your parents want to take pictures. Same thing for the bride at the wedding, but everybody's so nervous. They just, you know, like marching down there at double step speed. So anyway, walk down the aisle of the psalm slowly as you read them, both personally and publicly. So with that real pressure that I just threw out there, if somebody is gracious enough to read verses 1 through 5, let's take a look at David's passion, please. That's what I get.
All his affliction, by his work of the Lord, bowed to the mighty one of Jacob. Surely I will not enter my house or lie on my bed. I will not give sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids. But I'll find a place for the Lord, a dwelling place for the mighty one.
Beautiful. Thank you kindly. Well done. Up to the pressure and leapt that hurdle easily. Anybody, and this is not supposed to be a trick question, anybody know what the psalmist is alluding to here? What David's passion was or whatever? Correct, yep. So it's actually, of course, Solomon who ends up building the temple, but David was the one who really wanted it done. Like his, you know, at this point, David in the... When David was alive, the Lord was still dwelling, if you will, in the tabernacle, the tent that they set up in the wilderness, but they were now just setting it up at that specific time in Shiloh, if you care. But David's dream was to build a house for the Lord. And that's what the psalmist is telling God to remember. Interesting. So the focus is on David's passion. And, you know, in David's behalf, verse 1, all his affliction, like, you know, he didn't exactly have the nicest life ever, but his dream upon the culmination of his life, and once he finally got everything worked out, and once he got the kingdom and everything was peaceful, was to build a temple for the Lord. This is what he wanted. And you can see the strength with which he wanted it with the repeated vows, right? I will not enter my house. I will not lie on my bed. I will not give sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids. Now, he's not speaking literally. He didn't like camp outside his house or anything like that. But he's saying, like, this is my driving passion. This is what I want to happen. And as I said, that did not happen for David. Solomon builds it. But does anybody remember what God says to David in response? Again, kind of a trick, obscure question. Sorry. I guess that's fair, and you can say that to all of us. So let me rephrase it, because I'm not asking it well. Bad teaching moment. David says to God, I want to build you a house. And if you know, it's 2 Samuel 7, not that you need to look it up. God says back to David, it's not going to be the case that you're going to build me a house, rather. Bingo, that's right. I will build you a house. Like, that's literally what the text says if you look at 2 Samuel 7. So David is saying, I want to build you a temple, but God is saying, I'm going to build you a house, I'm going to build you a dynasty. And this is when he gives the Davidic promise that you will always have a descendant on the throne of Israel, which is where we're going to go when we get to verses 10 and 12. But for right now, as you're walking up, so now I'm feeling really guilty since Joe mentioned the triptych when he taught, what was that, last week, 2 weeks ago? Sorry. This has been a very... I'm glad. This has been a very high mileage week. You know what I mean? So it's hard for me to tell if things happened a month ago or a week ago. But anyway, so ever since Joe mentioned the triptych, now I'm feeling guilty because I haven't verbally stated it very much. I've been hammering you guys with PF caps lately. But so let's do the triptych. Original audience, and then Jesus, and then us. And don't get to us till you go through Jesus and original audience. So original audience, You're going up to the temple, whether literally or you're journeying to Jerusalem, and you're using this psalm to remind yourself, asking the Lord to remember, this came at a cost, man. Like, this was David's driving passion, and he never got to see it, but here it is, you know? Kind of, and this is where we get into past covenant qualities, and I'll tell you why covenant in a moment when we get down here. Well, I already hinted at it. God's covenant with his people and God's covenant to David that he would build him a house. This is how God relates to us in covenant. More on that when we get down here. But anyway, just the weight of it. Like, you know, when we go to Hallie's dad's place in Newcomb, like, he built that house. Like, not he paid somebody else to build it. Like, he built it. Every staple, every nail, every wire, every pipe. He built it, like, he did it. And I don't know, that just adds this, not like weight, bad weight, like, it just, it makes this appreciation for the place when I walk into it, you know. My grandparents, whether consciously or unconsciously, worked hard for their home to be a place of welcoming and grace and fun. You know, they built the pool so that they'd have a place for all their grandkids to come and the family to get together and stuff like that. So remembering the covenant past, remembering what went into making this temple, you know, the 4th of July is coming up. And so once again, especially as Americans, here I go waving my flag. You know, and I'm glad to wave it, like, thinking about just the tremendous unknowable sacrifices that have been made on all levels. Of course, we think of soldiers and we should, but you know, thinkers and builders and planners and all kinds of people who have done what they've done so we can enjoy what we do. So anyway, I say all that because I'm trying to say this is kind of the weight, the recall that we are to give as we approach, or the Israelites were to give as they approach the temple. We'll get to Jesus and we'll get to us in a moment. So any other thoughts on 1 through 5? Big idea, impressing upon us, recalling David's passion for this place to be built. Okay, so if another brave soul is willing, let's take a look at verses 6 through 9. And I think what's going on here is we're going to see the emphasis on community, and specifically the gathering of community. And then to make it even worse, I think there's like 2 or 3 proper names in here. So, like, place names. So don't feel too bad if you stumble over those. But anyway, anybody game to read verses 6 through 9, please? Beautiful. Not fishing for anything in particular yet, but reactions to those 3 verses or 4 verses. What's the general idea? What's going on? Here, here. So, yeah, from Ephrathah to Jar, mine is, or jail, I can't, Jar. The woods is how Gina's translated, but from all over, these people are coming to this one place. And I don't know if you guys paid attention, if and when you do your read through the Bible, in the Torah, especially in Deuteronomy, it's a big deal that God will choose a dwelling place for his name. Like it comes up over and over again. In the place where the Lord your God shall choose to dwell, there you shall take your sacrifices, blah, 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 blah. And now, original audience, we've got it. It's been built, and so we celebrate this temple. What a grand and glorious thing. So from all over, let us come together to go to this temple. And who else? This kind of a, it's not really a trick question, but you do need to read verse 8, hint, hint. Who else is invited to come? Yeah, it was interesting to me that there's an invitation that the psalmist says, arise, Lord, to your resting place, you and the ark of your strength. So if Raiders moment, Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, so there you go. But like the ark is the symbol of the covenant. It's literally where the covenant lived. They, you know, put the Ten Commandments in the Ark of the Covenant. That's the symbol of God dwelling with his people. And, you know, we could give a whole lesson on the ark, but it's interesting because, you know, you've got the covenant inside and on top, the lid where the two cherubim are, again, think Raiders of the Lost Ark. It just blanked out of my head. Now it came back. Anybody happen to remember? This is relatively obscure, but very cool. Anybody remember what the Old Testament calls the lid to the Ark of the Covenant? The two cherubim, and in between them is the... I'm sorry? It might be in your translation. That might be what it's called. It's the place of atonement. Say it again? The mercy seat. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. It's called the mercy seat. Isn't that a beautiful picture, by the way? In the very center of God's dwelling place is the covenant in the center, but over the covenant, which God's people would never be able to keep, is the mercy seat, because that's what you got to have to meet God. But that's what the center of the temple is. That's what they're looking forward to. That's what they're inviting God to. So it's this invitation for everybody to come together, including the Lord God himself, into his dwelling place to worship, verse 7. By the way, and again, there's so much you can think about here. It's beautiful that we worship at his footstool. You know, and Jesus calls the temple his footstool later, and several other Old and New Testament authors do. But God is so big and mighty that this grand and glorious temple is but his footstool. You know, that he's that big of a great God. And verse 9, note the tone. You know, what happens when we get together and celebrate as God's people? There is a priest clothed with righteousness and godly ones sing for joy. We're going to get into that more when we get down here to, or excuse me, when we get to verses 13 and 18. But this is a joyous gathering. I didn't go with this, but one of the opening questions I thought about asking you was, what's kind of the apex human event accomplishment, which I know is really vague, which is why I didn't go with it, but like different cultures have different ideas. Is it a grand sporting event? Like some people would say, you know, if you get to go to the World Cup, like if you're there in the World Cup, that's as big and good as it gets. You know, this grand stadium, these great athletes. Other people might say this military parade, you know, this is kind of a dark moment, but if you're in North Korea, Kim Jong-un, you know, and like this great parade, you would say that's the greatest, you know, human achievement. Maybe it's going to a fantastic concert or a museum or an art show. Maybe it's, I don't know, some kind of grand, you know, the parade whenever we landed on the moon. I don't know, whatever. But like, what's the great human, or what is a great human accomplishment, apex, that kind of thing? But I say that because I think what we're seeing here is, at least in the runnings for it, is God's people coming together to worship and celebrate and rejoice. And it is a time of joy and happiness and gladness and all kinds of great stuff like that. All right, let's game on. Actually, I should pause. Any other reactions or even better insights? Because you might have them. Well said. You need to write a letter to Dr. Bruce Perry about how to deal with traumatized people. That was a joke from last week. If you're actually here, my thing about he thinks practicing Christianity is the best thing in the world for traumatized people. You just don't have to believe in God for it. Like, well, you're kind of missing the point. Okay, sorry. Bad obscure joke, but well said. Anything else from 6 through 9? Okay, so now let's read, if somebody would, in a moment, read 10 through 12, and we're going to go back to recalling. This time the focus was on David's passion. This time we're going to switch, and we are told to recall God's, at least I'm going to argue, we are called to recall God's promise. So if somebody be so kind as to read verses 10 and 12, please.
Think of your servant David. Do not reject your appointment. The Lord swore an oath to David, a sure oath that he would not revoke. One of your own descendants. If your sons keep my covenant and the statutes I teach them, their sons will sit on your throne.
Beautiful. So I said a lot of this already when I was talking about 2 Samuel 7, but what I want you to see is, again, back to the original audience, as these Israelites are approaching the temple, they are recalling for themselves and they are calling other people to recall God's covenant faithfulness. Remember the covenant that he made to David, that he would always have someone sitting on the throne. Sunday school answer, that is Jesus. And like he's going to reign forever. Now, the second verse, or excuse me, not the second verse, verse 12 is the conditional part, which did not come true, right? If your sons keep the covenant, this will continue. And as you know from the story of Kings and Chronicles, that's not what happened. But at this point, for the original audience, the point is still remember and rejoice in the covenant faithfulness of God. So apparently when Joe teaches it, leaves this very lasting impression on me. But if you remember, last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever it was, several events ago, when Joe taught, he asked the question, you said something like, what's your favorite thing about God or something like that, God's qualities. Apparently it wasn't as much of an impression as it should have been. But there you go. Thank you. Because I remember you got the omnis, which I think is what he was fishing for. Now, I didn't answer out loud. There you go. Good job. But anyway, I didn't answer out loud because I didn't think it would be helpful. And the goal is not to be good. The goal is to be helpful. But probably the quality of God that I immediately think of is his covenant personality. And there's really no way to describe this without reading it in the Bible and seeing it for yourself, because there's no present human relationship that really is close to the covenant idea. I mean, of course, marriage is, but marriage is a covenant between equals. And, you know, we call God our covenant Lord. And I don't want to go into it much, both for time and because I'm boring you already probably. But, you know, in the ancient Near East, a covenant Lord, technically he was called a suzerain, if you really want to get into the weeds, would rule over a smaller, whatever, vassal. That's what he was called, a vassal. But the idea was the vassal would give homage and respect and love to the Lord. And in return, the Lord would basically meet all the needs of the vassal, but not just like meet the needs like whatever, some landlord sending gifts. Like he was the Lord. He was like this father figure. Again, I can't really describe it without you. You know, you just got to read the Old Testament and make the category as you read. But my point is the Lord would meet their needs. He would care for them. He would provide for them. He would protect them, you know, all the good things. And that was a beautiful relationship. But I say that because that's how God relates to us, taking a long way to make a short point. Like the thing I love about our God is his covenant quality. Like that's how he relates to us. He's not an employer. He's not a friend. I mean, he is a friend, but he's not merely a friend. He's not a buddy. He is a covenant Lord with all the wonderful stuff that goes along with that. And that's what the Israelites are celebrating in this psalm as they approach the temple. Remember his covenant to David and thus his covenant to all of us, to all of God's people. And of course, I'll go ahead and cheat and skip forward. So, original audience, Jesus, how is that covenant secured to us? We don't have an ark anymore. We don't need it because we have Jesus. He is the one who has made verse 12 come true. He did it. He's walked in the ways. He has been the son who kept faithful. And because he was faithful, he has ensured God's covenant love to us forever. When you screw up as bad as David did in Psalm 51, going back to Pastor Matt's sermon, you're just as secure as on the day that you managed to lead everyone in the airplane to Christ before you got off the runway. Like, I know I'm making up something exaggerating here, but like in both cases, you are exactly the same loved by God because it's not about anything we did. It's all about what Jesus did. He's the one who secured the covenant for us. And that's just, that makes you love him. That makes you swell with pride and joy. You know, on the day, you know, your child graduates and has done all these things and has learned from all your teachings and has achieved this great success, and he's on national news and they put the microphone up to him and he says, I just want to say one thing and thank the person responsible. Hi, Mom. But like, that was supposed to be a joke. Like, I'm the dad. Anyway, but like on that day when your kid's great, or on the day when you realize you're just terrible because you've unloaded on your kid for something that your kid didn't even do, but you assume they did and blah, 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 blah. On both of those days, you are 100% secure in Jesus because he's the covenant Lord who made this happen. And so you recall that. All right. Anyway, sorry. So jumping forward a little bit. Any other thoughts on verses 10 through 12? So let's finish it then, if you would. Verses 13 through 18. So we're going to come back to the theme of community. So the last time in 6 through 9, it was about the gathering, coming together. This time it's going to be about the flourishing. Excuse me. And I actually, like, in my notes, the first whatever title I put in was partying. But that can mean different things to different people. So I changed it to flourishing. But I want you to see, and I'm giving my cards away before we've even dealt the hand, but I want you to see, and this is very much in line with what Pastor Matt's been saying all summer, that when Christianity happens right, when the community happens, when God is dwelling with his people and people are with their God, there is this flourishing, this life, this joy, this happiness, this purity. Again, this is not an oppression. This is not an employee-employer thing. This is not a warrior, you know, martial law kind of thing. This is a happiness and joy and flourishing, and everybody gets what they need, and there's no snakes in the attic, and there's self-driving cars with decent chauffeurs and good weather and new things around every corner and pools and all-inclusive resorts and relationships with people around you and the best gluten-free pasta freshly made you've ever had. Like, that's what happened. Like, really, all those things are pointers to what happens when God's covenant community, including God himself, comes together. So anyway, I just gave away the lesson, but let's see if that's actually what the text says. So if somebody would read verses 13 through the end, 13 through 18, please.
Lord has chosen Zion, by desire that for his dwelling, saying, this is my resting place forever and ever. Where I will sit and groan, I have desired it. I will bless her with abundance, for I will satisfy her. Both her priests with salvation. For I will make a horn.
Beautiful. Thank you kindly. So this is going to be a little dangerous because we're making a grocery list, if you will, and I don't want it to be a grocery list. I want it to be, a museum hall of God's glory. What do they call the things that you used to look through that you would go, like, you know, you click like this and a new picture would come up. You know what I'm talking about? The little, like, binocular things. What were those called? Okay. View. All right, whatever it was, whatever the clicky thing is that, you know, turns the wheel and you see the things, that's what I want this to be of God's glory. You know, so you click through and see the beautiful things about God that we see in this text. So we're all going to, it's going to hit all of us in like a half an hour, whatever those things are called. So give me some of the slides or the pictures, if you will, that would be in that wheel of the viewfinder thing. So what do you see in 13 through 19? Just as beautiful, flourishing. I'll go with verse 15, since somebody mentioned how they go to food. Guess what? There's food. Verse 15, I will abundantly bless her food. And everybody gets, I will satisfy her needy with bread. What else you see? And clothing them with salvation. I don't exactly know what that looks like. You know, it's not supposed to be a literal image, but like, you know, this freedom, this joy, this clothing in good attire kind of thing. Again, the idea I'm trying to get at is this emotional flourishing, all needs met, and not just met, but like satisfied. What else you see? There you go. I like it. I love it. A shining and a glory. This is not a God who veils himself in mystery. Primarily, there are mysteries about God, but that's not, you know, he's not this ineffable, unknowable thing like Allah is, if you're familiar with Islam. Fair enough. Touche.
Says that the horn references power and authority.
Yep. Think of the ox, by the way. Very good. That's right. Sorry, my over-assumption about what you guys know, and we all know what assuming makes out of you and me both. And it does not make a donkey. It makes, in this instance, it makes an ox. Horn in the Old Testament. Horn is... I'm trying here, okay? But horn is a symbol of power. So the ox is the most powerful domestic animal they have. And when you go into battle, you blow the horn, the trumpet, that kind of thing. So your horn is your symbol of power. So the horn of David to increase his power. So we're powerful. Verse 18, our enemies are shamed. There's security. You don't have to worry about anything. Anyway, there's plenty more stuff in there. But again, the idea I want you to see is this picture of flourishing. Okay, so what? I'm out of time, so let me bring this in for application. I already did some pointing it to Jesus. Just see that Jesus is what makes all this happen. He is the dwelling place of God now. He is the Zion to which we approach. Obviously not physically, but spiritually and emotionally, we go to Jesus over and over again. And we do it with invitation both to Jesus into our lives and to other people, whether that's already Christians or not yet Christians. I got such a list and I don't have time to go through it all, but what does that look like? What does this, you know, the Israelites were physically walking up to a temple. What's it mean for us? You know, do we need to put some new music with the songs of ascent on the speakers, you know, around the church as you're walking in? I don't think that's what he's talking about. What's it look like for us? A couple of things. One, just because I'm going to forget about it, the kids' lesson this week, I want to try to figure out ways so you guys can talk with your kids. The kids' lesson this week is about how Jesus changed Saul into Paul in Acts 9, Saul's conversion. But I want you to see is when you invite people into the Christian community, people change. That's the lesson objective for the kids. Jesus changes us. And he does. He changes Saul into Paul. He changes us into more community gathering people. Even today, like I was thinking, as on my way up here, I saw two people who had that lost look. You know what I mean? Like they're at the intersection looking around. Now, seriously, old Zach, they're adults. They can figure it out. Sorry, I'm a horrible person apart from Jesus. I'm a horrible person with Jesus, but I'm an even more horrible person apart from Jesus. Like, they're adults. They can figure it out. But that's not what renewed covenant community lesson giving Zach did today. I stopped and I asked both of them, you look lost. Can I help you find anything? And the first one was like, oh, no, I've been here forever. I'm just trying to decide where to go. But the second guy was new and didn't know where to go. And so I helped him find wherever he was trying to go. So my point, like, I'm not trying to be like, look how good I am. Like, what I'm trying to say is, it changes you, and it changes you into a person who wants to gather people in, who wants to invite people into this beautiful thing that we have. Maybe that means special needs or prayer time volunteering. I say that because both of those came out in the email as things that we need. Helping out with a golf tournament, helping out with the kids. Thank you guys so much for doing that. This doesn't really affect us, but we've been asked to have people who are going to the 11 o'clock service, which you're not, go to the upstairs service or 8:15 because we got so many people coming. But it also might mean, I'm not saying you got to do this, I'm just giving examples. Maybe it means parking really far away so that other people can find a closer parking spot. Or maybe it means sitting in the middle of the pew so that the latecomers, like me, can find a place to sit that doesn't like awkwardly disturb everybody else. You don't have to do these things. I'm just trying to give you examples of what it looks like to think, how do I focus on community gathering and bringing people in and helping people feel welcomed and joyous? Of course, there's 100 other things that this looks like in the workplace and how you decide to spend your money and your time. But the big idea that I'm trying to get at is we are driven by joy, this joyous meeting with God in his dwelling place, Jesus. And because of that, whatever else we do with ourselves, our desire is to grow and gather God's people, whether that's playing together in a pool this afternoon, or whether that's bringing somebody food at a meal train, or whether that's inviting somebody from work to church, or maybe you don't even invite them to church. Maybe you just eat lunch together and catch up on how they're doing. I don't know. Whatever that looks like, the big goal is gathering people and God together to dwell together in great joy in their covenant community. Parting thoughts or comments from you guys? Anybody care to pray us out? Thank you, sir.
Dear God, we just thank you so much for another day. Another to learn more about you. Lord, this week, show others the love we have.
Amen.